This is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. Time now for our Africa update. This week, Archbishop Desmond Tutu urges President Obama to apologize for the Iraq War, plus deadly violence against peacekeepers in Somalia, and the father of modern African literature returns home to Nigeria. For more, we've got Roxanne Lawson. She's Director of Africa Policy for Trans Africa Forum. Hi, Roxanne.
Hi, Tony. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Let's begin with Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who recently wrote an article for the BBC News website urging President Barack Obama to apologize for the invasion of Iraq. The Nobel Peace Prize winner said Mr. Obama should not risk squandering the goodwill his election has generated. He also says he prays that Mr. Obama will be tough on African dictators and asked him to speak out against tyranny in Africa. So what's been the reaction to the Archbishop's comments?
The reaction has obviously, I think, been positive. I think the only criticism is that for Trans Africa Forum, for some of our partners, we wish that he'd asked the United States government to apologize to the people of both Ethiopia and Somalia for supporting the Ethiopian invasion and occupation of Somalia, which has had a disastrous impact on Somalis across the region of the Horn of Africa.
What's the significance of this request, though, for President Obama coming from Tutu?
I think that Desmond Tutu, obviously being a wonderful, internationally known humanitarian, peacemaker, statesman, this kind of request shows the great mantle that President Obama actually has to take up, that people across the globe are looking to him to help the U.S. right itself, to move from an environment of the last 7 to 8 years of militarization and bilateral responses to a new place of multilateral engagement, of being not just a leader, but a real partner with people across the globe and helping them to solve solutions to their own problems.
One last thing on this. It would seem as if this has ratcheted up sort of the foreign policy give and take, because if the president, Obama, I mean, does not come forward with an apology, that sets up a chain of other events potentially.
This is true. I mean, but the president is in a really difficult situation. I mean, there's lots of things the U.S. government needs to apologize for. They could apologize for slavery. They could apologize for aiding and abetting many dictators across the globe over the last 30 years. This latest, like, kind of spot on the U.S. and our ability to say that we are the leaders around humanitarian efforts and global good governance is one that needs to be addressed. But to apologize for Iraq when we're still with many troops on the ground, when there's no solution in sight to the problems that ail that country, I think would be maybe a nice gesture, but what really I think the president needs to be doing is finding a real Iraq policy that gets U.S. troops out of Iraq, that lets the Iraqi country go back to Iraqis and have them govern themselves.
All right, Roxanne, let's move on to another topic, on to the Horn of Africa, where last week more than 300 clerics and clan elders gathered in the capital city, Mogadishu, to demand African Union peacekeepers leave Somalia within 120 days. Just days later, Somali Islamist insurgents killed 11 AU peacekeepers from Burundi in an attack on an AU military base. And today, continued fighting has left at least 15 people dead, 60 others wounded. And against this backdrop, you have Burundian and Ugandan AU peacekeepers said to be the only foreign troops still in the city, although there is some conflicting information about whether or not the Ethiopian troops are still there as well. My question to you is, who is in control?
Well, I think right now it's hard to say. I think it's easiest to say who's not in control, and that's the Somali people. And they're the people who are mobilizing their clerics, mobilizing different factions, both armed and unarmed Somalis, to actually say that we want to take control of our country. One of the things that I think in all of this debate about what's happening in Somalia and the Horn of Africa, and that conversation is missing, that under the Islamic Court Union, Somalis actually felt on a local level quite secure and peaceful. On a regional level, on an international level, on a national level, the government was in shambles. But on a local level, where people actually live and work and feed their children, they felt at peace. And since then, as Somalia's been trying to actually to resolve its national, international role, its regional role, even in the Horn of Africa, Somalis have suffered. And so what they see is that, you know, the presence of foreign troops is actually just an exacerbation of their problems. If you recall, before 2006, before the invasion of Somalia by Ethiopia, Somalis weren't living in a wonderland, but they had the first peace in almost 19 years. Since the invasion, since the role of international community and international troops in Somalia, they've had the worst fighting in years. They've had wonderfully, horribly bouts of violence, of people being kicked out of their homes. They've had, you know, rising food crisis, and they just cannot survive. And so they see that any aggression is a negative thing.
So on top of that, then, here now you have the United Nations Security Council clearing the way for the establishment of a United Nations peacekeeping force in Somalia. How successful is that likely to be, given what you've described? And is it an issue of whether or not the peacekeeping force is from the United Nations or from the African Union, or do they just not want a peacekeeping force, period?
Well, as Trans Africa Forum, we support the UN's movements to have a peacekeeping force. We are unilaterally in agreement that it should be an African peacekeeping force. But what needs to happen is a shift from military solutions to a human security solution, one that takes into account Somalis and what they need on a local level as they begin nation building and peace building on a national, international level. It needs to be both processes hand in hand. And I think right now, what the UN has offered, what the AU has offered to some extent, and what the US has offered has only been a top-down approach, which doesn't work for Somalis.
Final question on Somalia is this. You talked about what's at the heart of the violence, and it sounds as if it is a combination of economic and political chaos. Is that a good description?
Most definitely. I mean, if you look at Al-Shabaab, which is not, as the former Undersecretary of African Affairs in the U.S. said, you know, linked to al-Qaeda, al-Shabaab is actually a decentralized group of people who want peace in Somalia and think that the only way to have peace is by, you know, ousting foreigners. And they're united with religion and with an international framework, but they're really trying to secure things on a local level. And I think that that's very indicative of where Somalia is.
You know, every week in Africa Update, we talk about things coming out of Africa, and oftentimes the conversation is like what we've just had with Somalia, and it's very troubling would be the word that I would use. Here's something that perhaps we can put in a very more positive category. Huge crowds turned out in Nigeria last week to greet one of the one of Africa's greatest novelists, Chinua Achebe. I think I'm pronouncing his name correctly. Here he is.
I have come to say thank you. You are my brothers and sisters. I've been away too long. I do miss Nigeria, and that's very strange because when I'm there, we're constantly quarreling.
This was his second time home in 20 years, Roxanne. He's been living in America since a terrible car accident in 1990 that left him in a wheelchair, paralyzed from the waist down. His most famous novel, Things Fall Apart, published more than 50 years ago. How have the views of him locally changed over the years?
Well, I think for people on the ground in Nigeria, they see, especially for the Igbo population, see Achebe as not just a wonderful novelist, but as a curator of their history. He is one of the last generation of people to actually learn about Nigeria and about Africa before colonization, and he writes about those periods quite beautifully, and he's been able to educate the entire world about that existence, those people, and what Nigeria was before it was Nigeria. And I think for that reason, he's dearly loved.
Would you say that he's influenced the worldviews of Nigeria and Africa in a major way?
Most definitely. I don't think you can think of a person who knows anything about Nigeria who hasn't read Achebe. I mean, it's really from his really well-known novels to the things that are lesser known, his commentaries on Nigerian politics, on global politics. All of that has shaped a whole, really now, three generations of Africanists, of Pan-Africanists, of scholars of human nature, as well as people who are, you know, literary hounds. And so I think that he is a giant among men.
That gives us a nice story to end on for this week's Africa Update. Roxanne, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Roxanne Lawson is Director of Africa Policy for Trans Africa Forum. She was at our headquarters in Washington, D.C.